Yo, have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? When I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show onto all the apps that people like to listen to? How do you make money? The answer was pretty simple for me. I started using Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and super easy to use. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise in your podcast. So that means you can get paid immediately, like right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading you this ad. It's super simple. So if you always wanted to start a podcast, let's start now. Go to anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of producers using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. See you soon. What's up, everyone? And welcome back to the Stretch 4 podcast. I'm your host, Peter Tran, and on the line coming out of Ottawa, I got my main man, Josh Cohen.
What up, though?
Dude, what a crazy day we've had in the NBA. We're recording at, about 3:30 on a Wednesday, and Jimmy Butler wants out of the city.
Yeah, it's a crazy story, but I think it was sort of expected, maybe not this soon. I think a lot of people expected him to eventually leave the team in free agency next year, but I guess the meeting with Tom Thibodeau didn't go as well as Thibodeau probably planned, and now he's asked for a trade, according to reports by Shams Charania and The Athletic.
Shouts to Jimmy, man. Get your bag. Earlier this season, he turned down a contract extension from the Wolves for like 4 years at $110 million. And now reports are out that he wants out of the team. He's already requested the trade and has three destinations in mind that would be perfectly ideal for him. First two are the two New York teams, the Nets and the Knicks. And the last team are the Clippers. All three teams have full available cap space next year to give him a max contract extension, which would be like 5 years at $188 million. So he's not joking around, man. This guy just wants to get paid. And I don't blame him whatsoever. Get your bag.
No, and this is going to be his last massive contract with him being 29, turning 30, I believe. So he wants to get 4 or 5 years at the max salary, which is going to be big for him since it is his third contract now. So he's eligible to make at least, I think he said $188 million for 5 years. If he were to go to a team before, I think if he goes to a team before training camp and he resigns with them, he's eligible still for the 5 years, isn't he?
Yep, that's exactly right.
So, I mean, like you said, get that bag. I don't blame him at all. But the sad thing is the Timberwolves last year going into last year's season were one of the up-and-coming teams. And everyone's really excited about them seeing them play because they were probably like a top three or top five league pass team going into last year anyway. And now it's all come crumbling down. They're sort of in the same position as they were before they traded for Butler.
Goodbye, Timberwolves, man.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it brings down his value, too, with him demanding a trade, so they're going to get maybe 60 cents in the dollar if they're lucky.
I wonder where can you actually see him going?
I can see Brooklyn being probably the main target. I think that they have a lot of guys that they can trade. They've really built up their team pretty well, despite not having any draft picks the last 3 years, I believe. And they're a team that struggles with attendance too, so they want to get a star in as soon as possible. And these types of players, like Butler's probably a top 15 player, top 10 arguably, in the NBA, and those players don't come up too often. So sort of like what Toronto did with Kawhi Leonard, sometimes you just have to take a chance and throw your hat in the ring and just go for it.
Yeah, it's true. I could see them trying to make a deal with the Clippers, to be honest. I don't know why he wants to stay in the West. I think he would want to go East. But the Clippers have a lot of pieces that they can move. You got Lou Williams and Tobias Harris contracts, which are both pretty hefty. You still have Bobons as well. Like, if they can move him, and then they'll be in pretty good position to make a run at Kawhi next summer as well, right?
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, Jerry West is consulting with them now, and he's one to, you know, help bring in superstars with him being probably the lead man and getting, you know, Shaquille O'Neal to L.A. and then building that dynasty.
They also just signed Lee Jenkins to some, I think, like a head of research and initiative position, which sounds awfully made up, but whatever.
He's essentially a private investigator looking into different college stars and their backgrounds and stuff.
So. He's not so private because everyone knows who he is now.
Yeah, exactly.
But he's got a relationship with Butler as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if they somehow managed to get him to LA. It would be pretty crazy. LA getting Butler and LeBron in one offseason. City's about to get lit.
Yeah, and again, if they get Butler, they have a good chance of getting Kawhi as well, even, you know, it pains me to say as a Raptors fan. They have an owner with deep pockets who's willing to spend the money, and they have two max cap slots coming up next offseason, so it's definitely possible. And I think the Clippers and the Nets are sort of in the same position now where they have a lot of young players. They have a lot of pieces that they can, you know, eventually trade, guys who maybe not are star players, but are up and coming 23, 24 year olds who are attractive to a lot of teams with them being on rookie contracts. So I think both teams have a good shot at landing Butler, obviously, now with him coming out and saying that they're two of the biggest targets on his list. But
yeah,
I mean, at the same time, like, how often does a player who asks to be traded actually get traded to the team that he wants? It's pretty rare.
I mean, I think he would have had a better chance if he didn't say which team it was. You know what I mean? Because if you look in the past, like, just 2 years alone, last year you had Kyrie requesting a trade. A month later, he was traded. Kawhi goes all quiet this year and then says he wants out of San Antonio. 2 months later, he's out of the city. You know what I mean? Like, it's not as crazy anymore to ship off your big players because GMs are realizing that it's better to get something than nothing for these guys, even in their last years.
Yeah, and honestly, with Butler's group most likely being the ones to sort of release this information that him wanting a trade, they're really hurting his own stock, which hurts his trade value, which hurts his ability to get traded before training camp. And if he goes into training camp next week, it's going to be really awkward if he's still on that team, which is going to be funny in itself.
Yeah, media day is on Monday, and I cannot wait to see this guy rocking that Timberwolves jersey.
Yeah, there's a lot of parallels between sort of what Tom Thibodeau is going through in being, you know, the vice president or the president of basketball operations, plus the head coach is working two jobs, which is almost impossible in this day and age.
Insane.
With, you know, Stan Van Gundy back in the day with Orlando, and, you know, Dwight Howard causing you know, a huge stir with the situation where the coach and the player didn't get along, obviously, and then both of those guys had to meet up in a pregame press conference and obviously out in the on the basketball court, and it was like the most awkward situation ever with Stan Van Gundy just essentially avoiding Dwight.
So awkward. I cannot wait. Like, I really hope nothing happens just so we can see how, like, cringeworthy the media day scrum is going to be.
Yeah. And honestly, there's so many different angles to this trade, too, because you have to look at Tom Thibodeau now, with him working as the guy who manages players, but also as the coach of the team. If he ends up trading Butler, which is looking like a very real possibility now, if that does happen, then his job is likely in danger. If it wasn't already, because he essentially traded, you know, three pretty good players and, you know, Zach LaVine, who could be a very good player.
You're so rude.
For a 1 year rental, right? Like, he basically traded three guys for one and he's going to end up with nothing. I mean, with Butler getting traded again, he's going to get traded for a lot less than what he's worth. So even if you get back a late first round pick and a young player or two, it's not going to make up for what you traded in the first place.
Yeah, but at least he got them to the playoffs.
I guess so. They finally broke the streak.
Exactly. 14 years is a long time.
I feel sorry for Karl Anthony Towns, though. I mean, he's one of the best big men in the NBA. His game keeps improving. You know, a lot of people think around the league that he is a bit soft, but, you know, he's still progressing. I mean, he's a young big man in the NBA, and he's a lot further than most guys are at his age. And he's going to be stuck with a lot of different parts and not a lot of talent around him once Butler gets traded.
Let's teach him how to play D before I feel sorry for the kid.
It just seems like he's going the exact same direction as Kevin Durant. Sorry, not Kevin Durant, Kevin Garnett.
Not Kevin Durant, but also not kind of like Kevin Durant. Except he's got Andrew Wiggins. Garnett never had anyone who got paid at least like Wiggins.
Yeah, that's true. Kevin Garnett always had, you know, spare parts, and then he eventually got Cassell and Sprewell around him, and those guys were at the tail end of their primes. And, you know, Wiggins, for all that he is, I mean, he's still a pretty good player in the NBA. He's not worth his contract as of yet, but at least he's still on the team. But at his number, it's going to severely hamper them in getting, you know, talent around those two guys.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure where this team is going to go. I guess it just depends on what they can get.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to be back in the dark ages just with those two and a bunch of, you know, pretty crappy veteran role players around them.
Hey. Taj Gibson is not crappy.
Yeah, he's going to be gone after next year, too.
Yeah, probably. Then the Timberwolves will be gone forever.
Yeah, I mean, with Butler leaving and Thibodeau likely, I think he's probably going to get fired after this season.
Yep.
If they don't make the playoffs, which they most likely won't with Butler leaving the team. You can see all the, you know, all the guys from the Bulls that have joined this team be off the team by next offseason, and this team looking entirely different and possibly going into another rebuild, which is sad for their fan base, only to enjoy 1 year until they had to blow it up again.
And what a year it was, man.
It's sad, too, because like, they were a 55-win team, or on pace to win 55 games when Butler was healthy, and they were the third seed in the West before he got injured.
I mean, if your man Cat could play any defense, it wouldn't have been a problem.
Well, he played defense for 1 month last year.
For 1 month?
Hey, if he gets to 2 months this year, I mean, by the time he's, 28, he'll be playing the entire season.
That means he'll have doubled his productivity in a year.
Absolutely. That's all you can ask for, right?
You're a very optimistic guy, man.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get out of Minnesota. I guess we'll just see what happens. We'll obviously have to do an emergency pod when he gets traded. Hopefully not before media day, because I want to see how awkward it gets.
Actually, just two more side notes on this. Andrew Wiggins' brother, Nick Wiggins, tweeted directly after that report came out. He said, "Hallelujah." And then he immediately deleted the tweet right afterwards. So obviously, Wiggins' camp is pretty happy that Butler's going to be leaving the team soon.
It's because no one's going to yell at him anymore. I can finally just chill on the court again.
Yeah, he's back to having no responsibility and nobody, you know, calling him out for his terrible defense and his lack of effort in general. But the other note is New York president of basketball operations, Steve Mills, said 2 days ago that the New York Knicks were committed to not sending draft picks away anymore. So that could be a big story going into this now that Butler has put them on his list of teams that he wants to go to, because New York doesn't really have a lot of pieces that they're able to trade or willing to part with anyway. I don't think they'd be willing to trade Kevin Knox at this point.
No.
And if they're not willing to trade draft picks, it doesn't really seem like they're going to be able to acquire Jimmy Butler through a trade anyway. And if he goes somewhere else, the chance of them getting him in free agency is pretty small, I think. So,
you know what? Good for Steve Mills for acknowledging this. That they're not just going to mess around and go after the biggest name that they can get.
It only took the New York Knicks 22 years to finally say that they're rebuilding. And finally, well, potentially committing to it. We'll see if they actually commit to it this time. They said it before in the past, and they traded for guys like, you know, Stephon Marbury and Steve Francis. And
Andrea Bargnani, hello.
Yeah, Andrea Bargnani. My goodness.
Yeah.
I think anytime a Psy calls that team now, they're just like, no, let's just let it
They already blocked his number, man. Come on.
Yeah, that's true.
Masai and Danny Ainge already have blocked numbers across like half the league.
Well, I think that's why Masai has a deal with BlackBerry, because he probably gets so many BlackBerrys sent to him with different numbers that he uses so to call the GMs that he screwed in the past.
He's got a bunch of burners.
Yes, seriously.
Give me number 4 today.
It's probably like a postal code from like Venezuela or something too.
Oh, that's genius. All right, let's go back to our previews, man. Gonna go to probably the best division. Well, not probably, by far the best division in the East, the Atlantic Division. We're going in alphabetical order like we've been doing all the way, and we're gonna hit Boston first. So what did they do this offseason? They re-signed Aron Baynes for 2 years at $10.6 million. Probably the biggest move that they did was re-signing Marcus Smart for 4 years at 52. Didn't really lose anyone, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, sounds like they're just ready to go back. Gordon Hayward is supposed to be healthy. Kyrie is supposed to be healthy. This team is going to make a run at the finals.
Yeah, they're essentially bringing back the exact same crew. And in addition to re-signing Marcus Smart, they essentially acquired, in terms of additions, they have Gordon Hayward coming back, obviously, from his year-long injury, and they also lost Daniel Theis last year to a severe, I think it was an ACL tear. So he was a key part of their team when he was healthy as well. He's playing around 20 minutes a game off the bench as an energy big man. So with them adding those two guys, with those guys playing, you know, a larger number of minutes going into next year, and then obviously Marcus Smart coming back, they have one of the deeper teams, if not the deepest team in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, even last year, they were... How far did they take Cleveland last year? To game seven?
Yeah, it was game seven.
We're going to game seven, baby! Game seven! Game seven!
Yeah, so they were what, like a half away from getting to the finals?
Yeah, and now you're adding Gordon Hayward and Daniel Tice back into the lineup. That's pretty solid. But the big question with them is how their chemistry is going to work with you know, five guys who essentially need the ball or want the ball a lot of the time, and Kyrie Irving, who's a huge usage player, being able to make it work and bring it all together.
Yeah, I mean, I've listened to a bunch of interviews with like Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum over the summer, and they're saying all the right things. You know, we're excited to have Gordon Hayward back. Coach is going to make the right decisions to put the best guys on the floor at the right times. We're just going to listen to coach, let him lead us, blah, blah, blah. But it'll be kind of different once you're actually on the floor, right? Or in this case, maybe not on the floor. Especially for young guys, like guys of that caliber, they want to play all the time. So this could become a real issue, but I don't know. I kind of believe them. On the other hand, just because they do seem like the kind of guys who just want to win. But it's really hard to tell until they're actually on the floor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and on one side of things, you have the first-rated defense in the NBA last year, despite having so many injuries over the course of the season. And on the other hand, you have a lot of guys who played extended minutes with Rozier and Smart and even Marcus Morris, who we haven't talked about yet, now coming off the bench. And are those guys going to be happy in more limited roles playing behind, you know, their starting five with Irving, Brown, Hayward, Tatum, and Horford? You know, if they're only playing 15 to 20 minutes a game behind these guys, is that going to cause an issue? But at the same time, if it doesn't, and, you know, Coach Stevens, as the wizard that he is, makes it all work, you could see this team winning 65 games if it does work out.
Yeah, this team, man, I still can't believe how deep this team is. It's actually insane. Like, props to Danny Ainge for his hustling of, you know, Philly and of Brooklyn over the past, what, 5 years only? When was that KG, like, Pierce trade? Five, six years ago at most?
Yeah, I think it was 6 years ago. Yeah. And, yeah, it's all coming to fruition now. It's pretty crazy. And this team is probably going to be only together for, you know, 1 year, obviously, with Rozier likely leaving, or if they, you know, do end up just letting Kyrie go, they're probably going to give Rozier a nice little contract. So the Irving question is going to be huge this year. If he doesn't stay healthy, I can see Danny Ainge just choosing not to re-sign him at that huge max number, because he can make upwards of 5 years, I think, around the same number as Butler, around $200 million. Yeah. So if he, you know, does make the first team All-NBA, it could be even larger at $220 million, I believe. So it's going to be a big question mark going into the offseason, but I think that's all going to depend on how healthy he stays throughout the year and if he does play in the playoffs this year.
Yeah, at least they have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown still on their rookie contract, so it makes it a lot easier for them to afford such big contracts with, you know, obviously the bigger guys like Hayward and Irving.
Yeah, for sure. And again, even if they lose him, they still have Rozier to you know, come in. He's shown that he can play playoff minutes and not be afraid. And they have their rock in Horford, who's, you know, still on the books for 2 years at a pretty good number as well. So even if Kyrie does leave, they still have a really good team with a lot of depth. So it's not going to hurt them too much.
Yo, do we seriously think that Terry Rozier is that good?
I don't think he's a top 15 point guard as of yet, but I think in the right situation, he could be like a Jeff Teague type of point guard, like a pretty average starting point guard, which is still pretty good.
Yeah.
Making like 15 to 17 million a year, like a, you know, decent starting salary for a starter.
Do you want Terry Rozier right now, or would you rather have Dennis Schroeder?
Terry Rozier, easily.
Damn, okay.
Yeah, Dennis Schroeder's had issues in the locker room with, you know, a lot of his teammates, and Rozier's liked by everyone, it seems like, and again, he showed up in the playoffs last year in a role that nobody really expected him to play, so he's shown that he can step up to the level that he needs to play against top-level competition.
Yeah, but it's easy to be liked when the team is winning, right? Like, when you're winning, no one's going to complain about your, you know, hogging the last shot down the stretch of the playoff game. when they start to lose a bit, I don't know. I think that's when you would really see locker room issues arise. Not that Boston's going to end up losing, but you know what I mean? Like, it's hard to compare that aspect of it. I was thinking more of on the court, like, do you want Terry Rozier to start for your team? Or would you rather have Schroeder? I think they're on, like, the same level at this point.
I think offensively they're pretty close. I think Schroeder has the speed advantage, obviously, in getting in the lane, but obviously Rozier is a better shooter. Yeah. But I think what separates them is I think Rozier just sort of has his dog in him, you know? Like, he's really competitive, and he shows up every night, and he plays really hard, which sometimes that has to do with coaching a lot of the time. So if he went to a team like Atlanta, maybe that's not the case. But the other thing is his defense, right? His defense was really good last year, and he competes at a pretty high level against, you know, shooting guards as well when he has to switch. So I think that's what separates him from a guy like Schroeder, whereas he's a little bit too small to guard, well, almost any of the point guards in the NBA, which is why Atlanta was a terrible defensive team last year.
All right, so Boston's over-under is currently sitting at 59, according to Westgate. What do you think? Last year they had 55.
I think with them going into the season healthy and this team having this much depth, even more than last year, I think they're going to go way over. I think they'll be at least 63, if not 65.
Yeah, I was going to say like 64, 65 as well. This team is way too good for 59.
Yeah, and I expect them to be the first seed in the Eastern Conference as
well.
I mean, I love my Raptors and everything, but I think it's going to take some time for them to figure out their own chemistry with, you know, Kawhi coming in the fold. So at least you had a guy like Kyrie play with these guys for, I think, around 55 games last year, so they know how he plays.
Yeah.
And they can sort of fit around him. But I think he would probably be at his best next year if he decided to take more of a role where he's the distributor. I know it's probably not going to happen because he's maybe the best individual scorer in the NBA. But if he decided to do that and get guys involved, like, this team's offense would be absolutely amazing. And honestly, like, last year they were 18th in offensive rating. So with this starting five coming into place, if they make it work early in the season, they could be in the top 10. And if they maintain a top three defense, if not top one like last year, again, they could win upwards of 65, even more than that game, 65 plus games.
Yeah, I hear you. Between that and their incredible defense and the depth of this team, so say someone needs to sit. If Kyrie ends up missing 30 or 40 games, it's not really that big of a loss because you still have Marcus Smart and Rozier coming in. And basically, it's like that at every position, right?
Like, there's, I think the one guy they can't afford to lose, though, is Horford.
Yes, I was going to say the exact same thing.
Yeah, even though he's going to take a lesser role this year, I think, with you know, the four other guys being the starting line that need the ball.
Yep.
I think that if he ended up going out, like, their defense would just plummet. I like Baines and everything, but he's not as mobile as Horford. And Horford just, he's just a rock. He just knows how to play.
Yeah. You can't replace Horford with Marcus Morris and Aaron Baines. Right? Like, neither of them are the kind of defender that he is. Neither are as good offensively either. So he is like the key cog to this team actually working. It's kind of like Duncan in San Antonio for those years too, right? Obviously not to the same caliber, but his impact to the team is solid.
Yeah, there's only maybe 5 to 10 big men in the NBA that can effectively guard the rim, switch on the perimeter, and, you know, contain the pick and roll as well, and just basically guard against any coverage. And Horford's one of those guys. And even though his stats may not be up to what people consider to be all-star caliber, he does so many other things and does little things that matter in winning.
Yeah. Pound the over, guys. Pound the over. Let's go to a possible home of Jimmy Butler in the next week or so. The Brooklyn Nets. What did they do? They signed Ed Davis. They signed Shabazz Napier. They got Jared Dudley and Kenneth Faried via trade. They let go of Jeremy Lin, Jahlil Okafor, Nick Stauskas, who I forgot they actually had. And, oh, they got rid of that massive Mozgov contract.
I think everyone's forgotten that they've had Nick Stauskas on their team at one point or another.
It's, yeah, it was a long time ago, apparently. Not really. Yeah, this team, I mean, they're essentially a team full of guys who know how to play at this point. And a team that's going to be really underrated by their opponents, right?
Yeah, I think they're just a really well-coached team. And they play, you know, the 2018 style where they just spread the floor and shoot a ton of threes, even though last year they didn't really have a lot of guys that shot the three very well besides Alan Crabb at certain points of the year and Joe Harris off the bench. But they brought in a few more shooters and a guy like Fareed that's, you know, very motivated to get his career back on track.
Is he?
You would think so, because I think that if he doesn't have a good year next year, he's going to be out of the league.
He should be out of the league. He's not very good.
No, he's had his moments in the past. I'm not a big Kenneth Fareed fan, but I think that he has a role in the NBA as a rim runner and a guy that can play good defense. But it just seems that when Kenneth Fareed does try, he is a pretty effective player.
I guess. I mean, I remember being a fan of his when I early on, but I don't know. I'm not a fan. But
I mean, the first 2 years in the NBA, he was just all over the place. He was grabbing rebounds. He was one of the best offensive rebounders in the NBA. And he was just finishing everything around the basket. And then all of a sudden, it just went downhill really quickly for him. And he's still pretty young, too. But
yeah, he's 28, but he can't play D, so whatever.
Yeah, he's not going to have a huge impact on this team, I don't think. But I really like the Davis fit for them, with them bringing him in for a pretty cheap number. I think they got him at $5 million a year for 2 years.
Yeah, something like that. He's so cheap. But they have Ed Davis and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at the front, along with your boy Jared Allen. That's a pretty good front court. Like, they're nice and young. This whole team is so young. And these guys are drinking the Kenny Atkinson Kool-Aid, and I don't blame them for it, because they're doing really well.
Yeah, I don't think they have any players on this team that they would be not willing to part with. So I think that any of these guys are, you know, have the potential to be traded this year, even though they really like Hollis Jefferson and Jared Allen, especially. I think that they can be had in a trade if they're able to get a guy like, you know, Jimmy Butler or even a bigger star than him. I don't think they would trade Jared Allen for Jimmy Butler, but I think they'd be willing to give up a guy like Hollis Jefferson to get a star like Butler and hopefully get some buzz in the seats, because they've been struggling a lot attendance wise for the past, well, ever since they moved to Brooklyn, essentially beyond the first year. And that whole experiment with Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce didn't work out. So the fans have been very disappointed with what they've been doing since that point, because they've been handcuffed and not having any draft picks.
Yeah. I could see them actually. What do you think of a Damari Carroll and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson package for Jimmy Butler? Both expiring contracts this year. Jefferson is still young, that Minnesota would still want him around to push the young guys on their squad. And then Carroll expires at the end of the year. Let him walk, so you're off of his contract.
Yeah, I think they might have to include the future first-round pick, if not this year's first-round pick, in that situation. Or they'd have to try to. I mean, Minnesota would have to try to get that pick, obviously. And I think if it came down to it, they might accept that deal. Because you're not going to get much more than an expiring deal and a pretty good young player in Hollis Jefferson for Butler at this point, with his value not being where it was, you know, even a day ago.
Yeah, that's fair. What do you think of D'Angelo Russell? Do you think he's learned after his debacle with Nick Young and Snapchat from a few years ago?
I don't think so, to be honest. I mean, I enjoyed watching him play his first couple of years. Like, he is extremely smooth on the court, and he has some redeemable qualities, but he isn't even close to being a top 20 point guard right now. And I wouldn't say they're in the same type of situation as Boston with Kyrie, but in a broader spectrum, I think that they're not really sure if they want to move forward with Russell, and he's going to be a free agent or search a free agent coming up this year. And if he doesn't really show out and show that he can be a star, which is what they expected of him last year, which he didn't really show, I can just see them either moving him to the deadline or just letting him go entirely in free agency, because he's going to demand such a high number in restricted free agency.
Holy. Imagine if he just walks.
And, I mean, honestly, like, your boy Spencer Dinwiddie actually played better than he did last year when he was in the starting lineup.
Spencer Dinwiddie is a very solid player. I'm not going to say he's really good, but he's a very solid point guard. He's tall.
Yeah.
He can shoot-ish. He knows how to find his teammates. He knows how to play defense properly. I mean, he pretty much fits that system perfectly.
Yeah, he had his moments last year. He had a couple game-winning shots. He had a couple clutch shots throughout the course of the year, especially in the second half of the year when Russell was injured. But the one thing they tried last year was playing those two guys together. And
that did not work at all.
No, their net rating was terrible with those two guys playing together. But in terms of the lineups involving Dinwiddie as a starting point guard on his own, they were actually in the positive with him starting versus Russell, who was a big net negative last year. And I don't know if Russell's ever going to put it together. He has a lot of talent, and I'm not sure if he's just ever going to get it and, you know, be able to even though he shows good flashes of, you know, his passing off the pick and roll and being able to shoot off the dribble, he's just not consistent at all.
Yeah, he's really streaky, eh? I didn't realize how bad it was until last year, but he's kind of similar to, like, Jordan Clarkson in the way he shoots. Like, it's either straight fire or he's just ice cold.
Yeah, and that's not the type of player you want running your team, obviously. And his effort on defense has never been good. He's been one of the worst defensive point guards in the NBA in the last 3 years. So I'm not sure that's the guy you want to put all your eggs in one bunch for, you know, put all your money into.
Is his defense that bad?
His defense is terrible.
Wow.
I think Kyle Lowry dropped like 40 on him a year ago.
No, but this is your all-star point guard Kyle Lowry here, you know. Come on.
We'll get to that later on.
Oh, man. All right. So the Nets have an over-under of 32 wins. Last year, they had 28. I got them under. 32 seems like a lot.
It does. They have more talent than the team this year, but because they have so many guys that are really eligible for a trade, I mean, it's going to be tough for them to, I think, keep this roster intact. And again, if Russell doesn't really play up to par, he could end up being traded as well, and then you have a team that may just decide to tank for the rest of the year. So I know this team wants to win games this year because they want to be attracted to a potential free agent, since they have, I think, either one or two max slots, depending on what they do with a few of their contracts. So even though they want to win, I'm not really sure how far this team can really get to in terms of the win totals. So I'm going to go slight under at 31. But I can see them getting up to 36.
I can see them at like 29 to 30. I can't really see them going over unless everything just works out perfectly. Kenneth Faried plays like he was in his first 2 years. Damari Carroll starts hitting shots again like he was in Atlanta, which he kind of did last year, I guess.
He wasn't that bad last year.
Yeah. Alan Crabb is... He's Alan Crabb. I mean...
I think Carroll's a serious candidate, too, to get traded to Houston at some point this year, along with Bazemore Atlanta as well. So I think both those guys would be a good fit. And him going into this last year as a rental, I mean, that's not a bad option if all you're trading is a second-round pick and a player.
He would be perfect on Houston.
Yeah.
Like, he would fit in seamlessly.
Yeah, I mean, he could easily play that Ariza role. Maybe not as good defensively as Ariza, but in terms of hitting shots, he'd be able to, you know, hit the same amount of shots as Trevor or more. But I think the only way that the Nets get up to, you know, 35, 36, even 38 wins is if Jared Allen takes a massive step in becoming sort of what Clint Capella became last year.
Yeah.
And a guy that can just be consistent as a rim runner, a guy who gets, you know, a ton of rebounds, that defends the paint. And he showed flashes last year as a rookie, so... I mean, it could happen, but he's in a good environment, too.
You would need a point guard to get him the rock a lot, and D'Angelo Russell hasn't really done that yet. That's what I would be more concerned about with their start. Is D'Angelo Russell going to involve all of his teammates first, or is he going to get his like he always has?
Honestly, the other side of this is if, you know, D'Angelo Russell doesn't play well early in the year, and then they decide to, you know, put Spencer Dinwiddie in his spot, Brooklyn could actually end up winning more games than if they just decided to keep Russell in the starting lineup. So it's sort of funny how, like, your supposed franchise point guard, if he doesn't play well, they end up winning more games without him. In my opinion, anyway. And the numbers prove it, too, from last year. So,
yeah, but you could also chop it up last year to just, you know, him coming back from injury, having chemistry with the team, that kind of crap. It's really hard to tell. I think if they have any chance of going over their projected win total, they have to get off to a really strong start. Like, they had to come out of the gate like, like Chicago did in December last year, like Orlando did last year, shooting like 50% from three. Some crazy stuff like that has to happen for them to go over, I think. Otherwise, I'm calling a soft-ish under.
And because they play such a high variance style with the amount of threes that they shoot, it's definitely possible to get hot during certain parts of the year, sort of like Orlando did starting out last year. I think they were 8-2 to start off the year. And then after that, the numbers just, the law of averages sort of kick in.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's move on, man. We're going to take that subway across to MSG. So they got your boy Mario Hezonja, Noah Vonleh, and they drafted probably the best draft picks that they've had in a while, aside from Kristaps, Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson, who both impressed during Summer League this year. And they didn't really lose out on much. They lost out on Michael Beasley and Kylo Quinn.
True, but the big problem with this team is obviously that Kristaps Porzingis could be out at least up until January. And last April, after Porzingis had been injured for 2 months, he got injured, I think it was on February 6th, where he tore his ACL dunking on Giannis. The owner of the team.
Amazing, by the way. Dunking on somebody is incredible.
Yeah, that moment was something else, too. That was a crazy dunk, and then all of a sudden, all the air just got taken away from the arena. They just got blown out of the arena with him staying on the ground holding his knee. But James Dolan in April said, and I quote, "I've been told everything from December to him being out for the season, so I don't know what to expect on that." So, I mean, if the Knicks get off to a really rocky start, which they probably will with their level of talent right now, and Porzingis isn't quite ready to return in January, it could be, a Ben Simmons type of situation from a couple of years ago where they just decide, even though the guy's probably ready for March or even late February, they're better off just keeping him out the entire year and just playing for a draft pick instead.
Which is most likely what they'll do. I can't really see them pushing
it's the Knicks, Peter. They're going to bring him back in like December and then he's going to tear his ACL again.
No, man, these are the new Knicks. Not trading away draft picks. Rebuilding properly, not chasing Jimmy Butler. Got to believe in this new team.
And somehow they're going to trade Porzingis midseason and sign Steve Francis.
Oh my God. Going back to Jimmy Butler, I saw people post like shots of, the ESPN trade machine?
Yeah.
Shots of Joakim Noah for Jimmy Butler. Perfect trade.
That would be funny. Thibodeau would be happy too.
That would be absolutely amazing. I kind of like where this team is going. Obviously, this year they're not going to be very good, but they're kind of lining themselves up for the future really well. After this year, they're out of the Kanter contract. Hezonja's only signed for 1 year, so his contract will be gone. Hardaway is still there, which is going to suck because his contract increases every year. But they're in talks to get rid of, or to, I guess either stretch out or just waive Noah. They're trying to get rid of Courtney Lee. Like, they're bottoming out properly.
Again, it is the Knicks, so I'll believe it when I see it, because the last time they had major cap space, they were trying to go after LeBron. They ended up with Amare, which at the time seemed like a good deal, and he played pretty well for his first year, and then obviously his knees just sort of caved in.
Hold on. That Amare thing only went poorly because they got Melo at the same time. They got Melo later that offseason. That was an awful idea.
At the same time, Amare his body disintegrated after a year. And that was after a time where he tore his ACL twice with Phoenix. And, with Phoenix letting him go, that should be like a smoke signal saying, like, if, one of the best training staffs in the NBA doesn't believe that you can play for another 4 years, you should probably take another look and just say that this guy's probably not worth it as much as I like Amare. But getting back to this team, I mean, with the management as is, Steve Mills, who's the, the president of basketball operations for this team, he's the guy who signed Tim Hardaway Jr. for $75 million. So I just don't trust this management team to be able to build this team in a way that is sustainable.
You know why I kind of believe in them right now? They only signed Noah Vonleh to a one-year contract.
Yeah, I guess in 2006 they might have signed him for 4 years, $60 million.
Exactly. That's why I'm optimistic. You're also going to get rid of Ron Baker's stupid $4.5 million contract this year. I mean, they're lining themselves up for something in the next offseason, right? So the assumption, assuming that they're actually doing it properly, they're lining themselves up really well.
I love how Phil Jackson gave Ron Baker that contract on his way out, too, just because he liked the kid.
I mean, sometimes you just have to reward good work.
I mean, what better parting shot than to give a, $10 million contract to a kid who hasn't really shown anything, but you guys probably hung out in Montana and had a couple beers with.
Oh, you could trade away like three of your best players for Blake Griffin, who's making like $40 million. That's what you can do.
This is true.
That's a much worse shot.
Yeah, a couple of things that I'm excited about with this team is obviously Mario Hezonja being in the Big Apple. I mean, him playing in Madison Square Garden could cause some moments this year of either Knicks fans just like pulling their hair out or just pure basketball bliss.
Yeah, what do you think of Mario? I was very optimistic about him coming into the league, and he hasn't really shown me much.
I'm still a believer. I mean, there's certain young players who just don't get put in this, you know, the right situation. When they get drafted in the NBA, the expectations are too high, or the team just isn't any good and doesn't really know how to use them. And I really do believe in his talent. I think that he could be a really good stretch four off the bench for like a pretty good team in the future. There you go.
Yeah, but he's so mobile too, right? Like, he's mobile, he's got a great shot, he can find his teammates. Like, his court vision is actually really good. It's just not, it wasn't very utilized in Orlando.
Yeah, and I mean, he just hasn't put it all together yet. And I think in the situation where he's going to handle the ball more often, especially if he's a starter going into the year, I think him and Kevin Knox are in a fight over the starting four slot going into the year. And if he's able to become a starter this year, I think he's going to have a lot of opportunity to play, you know, 30 plus minutes a game, and hopefully be able to prove that he is a quality NBA player, if not a starter. I don't think he may not be a starter going into his prime, but I think he can help a team with his shooting at least, and if not, then his ball handling as well.
What do you think about Courtney Lee? Reports came out yesterday that they're trying to ship him out. He's making $12.2 million this year and then $12.7 next. I mean, he's a pretty good 3-and-D guy. I think a team like OKC could really use him if they can afford that kind of contract.
Yeah, OKC is already paying so much in luxury tax. I'm not sure they want to take him on, but I see your point for sure. I mean, he's a guy that can help a lot of teams, and the average starter in the NBA makes 15 to 16 million at this point. And with him only making 12, that's not a bad contract right now, especially if he's on the books for another year as well, where you can sort of retain him for going into next year, especially if you're a contending team. And if he's a guy that's playing 18 to 24 minutes a game off the bench for you, he's a guy that you can actually rely on. So if I'm a team that's, you know, in the 5-7 seed in either conference, I'd be looking at trying to trade for him.
Yeah, yeah. He could really boost like a lot of teams. Imagine him out in Milwaukee.
Yeah, definitely. And they're a team that actually needs a starting two, because right now they're starting Tony Snell, I believe, still. And he's basically the worst version of Courtney Lee. Even though Courtney Lee's a bit undersized, he tries really hard on defense. He just knows where to be on the floor, especially with the, you know, different defensive schemes that he's had to play in the last couple of years on different teams. And he's always seemed to fit in no matter where he goes. And his shot has been reliable over the course of his career. And he's, even though he's bounced around every single place he's been to, he's been a pretty consistent performer.
I love Courtney Lee. Let's get him to Milwaukee. Then they can actually do something. He can actually contribute rather than being stuck at MSG, not really knowing what to do. Because he's obviously not like a number one, two, three, or four option, but he's that guy who just knows what to do for the team.
Yeah, at the same time, though, if you're going to trade him and you're a Knicks fan that actually wants to watch this team, if he gets traded, you're going to see a lot of lineups involving Trey Burke and Emmanuel Mudiay or Ntilikina. And those backcourts are going to be throwing up so many bricks that they might build a new bridge in New York.
Yeah, a brick bridge? I'm not sure that's how it works, but
Brooklyn Bridge. Brooklyn Bridge.
There you go. Good idea. All right, so their over-under is 28.5.
Under. Somehow way
last,
under.
Hold on. Somehow last year they had 29 wins. Can you believe that?
Well, I mean, with Porzingis being healthy, they might have actually gone over that total, but with him being in question this year and them likely getting off to an absolutely awful start with this starting lineup and lack of depth, I can just see them, you know, again, like we talked about before, just sort of sitting out Porzingis the entire year, if not a large portion of the year. And even if he comes back, he's going to be rusty, and he may take up to a month plus to get back to the level that he was at before the injury. And it was a very serious injury, too, because when it was first diagnosed, they said that he might be out up to 10 to 12 months, and that was in February, right? So that would leave him at, you know, around December, if not, you know, February at that point. And again, during that time frame, if you're, you know, 10 and 40 or something along those lines, why would you even think about bringing him back? Unless, you know, because you're the Knicks.
Because you are the Knicks, that's why.
Yeah.
I'm giving them like 24. I'm going under as well. I can't see this team really winning anything. Like, they're going to have to rely on Trey Burke to score a lot. Trey Burke and his Kanter show with Kevin Knox hitting threes. That's going to be tough to watch.
Yeah, it's hard to rely on a rookie to be one of your top scorers, too. That never ends well.
Unless it's Donovan Mitchell. Then it ends very well.
Then it ends very well, for sure.
Yeah. All right, let's get out of New York. This is too much Big Apple for my liking. I want to go to Philly. They didn't really do that much this summer. They got Wilson Chandler and Mike Muscala. They re-signed J.J. Redick for 1 year, $12.25 million. And they re-signed known veteran Amir Johnson, but they lost out on a lot of dick guys, man. They lost Bellinelli, Ilyasova, Justin Anderson, Rashawn Holmes. What was that other guy's name? Timothy...
Lualu Cabarro.
Yeah, ooh. Ooh, I like that.
I came prepared today.
Nice. I just have TLC in my notes. yeah, they lost out on a lot of shooting this summer, and they basically only got Wilson Chandler who can shoot.
Yeah, they're going to be putting a lot of faith into Markelle Fultz and his development. And as we've seen in the offseason, he's been working with known trainer or, you know, lead trainer, you know, godly trainer, whatever you want
whatever
to call
him. Title is.
Drew Hanlon. And they haven't released any video with regards to his jump shot. It's funny how, like, they show, like, all these different guys going at one another. There's a video with, you know, Jason Tatum taking on Joel Embiid in one-on-one scrimmages. And then they show Markelle Fultz about to take a jump shot. Then they go away and the camera moves to a different guy, like Gordon Hayward shooting threes on the opposite end of the court. They're really trying to hide this. And I think the biggest story going into preseason that people are waiting for is to see if Markelle Fultz's jump shot is workable now.
You know what? Even if you don't show that kind of stuff on video, how is it that no one else is going to talk about it? You know what I mean? Like, if I'm anyone in any front office, I'm like, yo, I'm calling up anyone I can. Yo, how's Markelle's shot looking? Yeah, how's the family? Yeah, they're good. How's training? How's Markelle? You know what I mean? Like, how do you not scout for this kind of thing?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me at all if Brian Colangelo, before he got caught in that scandal, went to those gyms and went to Drew Hanlon, and he had every single person in that gym sign a non-disclosure agreement saying that you will not discuss what you've seen and you will not release any footage of Markelle Fultz's jump shot, no matter what.
That's true.
Trying to protect the kid. It seems like he was like one of the guys that Brian Colangelo actually liked out of all the, you know, the tweet storm that came out.
Or wasn't he Colangelo's pick?
He was, yeah. He traded up for him, obviously, too. And he protected him throughout the years, saying that he had a shoulder injury when it was clear it wasn't that. It was just like either the yips or something mental.
Yes, you admit it. You admit it.
Of course, I said that throughout the year.
Oh, wait, no, I've been saying it was a shoulder injury. My bad.
No, there's no way it's a shoulder injury.
No, man, it's something. It's a combination, shoulder and yips.
You don't just forget the shoot when, you know, you had a shoulder injury. Guys come back and their shot form is the exact same. This is a guy who was a 40% three-point shooter in college. There's no way that a shoulder injury caused him to change his form to that level to where he was basically shooting like Joakim Noah from the free throw line.
Oh, God. Oh, man. I see what you mean, but I don't know. There's something about it. I think it was more than just the yips.
But I disagree. We'll from what I've, like, I was a big baseball fan back in my day. Talking like an old man now, but a guy named Rick Ankiel, who was a closer for the St. Louis Cardinals way back in the day, like, he was throwing heat back then. He was throwing up to 98, 99 miles an hour. And then all of a sudden, this one random day in summer, and this during an afternoon game, he just couldn't get the ball over the plate anymore. And he would throw the ball in the stands. He would throw the ball in the dirt. And nobody had any idea what the hell was happening. And they had to send him down to the minors. And this is a guy who was like one of the top closers in Major League Baseball. And then you look at a guy like Nick Anderson also with Orlando when they were up. Or sorry, not up, but they were playing game one of the finals against Hakeem Olajuwon and the Houston Rockets. And I believe they were up 2 points with about 7 seconds or so left in game one. And Nick Anderson went to the line to ice the game just by either hitting one free throw or hitting two free throws to give him a three-point lead or a four-point lead. And he missed both. The ball got tapped back out to him. He caught the ball, and he got fouled again, went to the line, and missed another two free throws. And then after that, he just stopped going to the basket altogether. So I think the yips are a real thing, and I just really can't see how you can explain what happened last year, since it is... it's basically unprecedented that a player would just sort of forget a key NBA skill, something that he was very good at in college, going into his first season.
I don't think he forgot it. I think he got hurt. And then because he got hurt, he got scared and didn't know how to shoot. And henceforth, the yips came about.
Maybe. I don't know.
It'll be interesting to see him coming back. I'm very curious to see how this team progresses. If he comes out at what they projected him at, like, you know, a good scorer, a decent defender. Like last year, he was already a decent defender, not knowing how to shoot the ball. This team has so much potential. You still have Embiid, who's, what, a top 10 player right now?
Yeah, he's up there. He's at least top 15. And if he stays healthy this year, he can easily be top 10.
Yeah. Ben Simmons, rookie of the year, who's already on path to be one of the best of all time if he continues this rate of progression. You still have Dario Saric, who's making like next to nothing and is a very good role player. And then you re-signed JJ Redick. And you still have Covington, who's probably the streakiest shooter that they have. I mean, this team is pretty nice.
Yeah, and again, going back to our previous podcast, like, this team had the best net rating in terms of starting fives in the NBA last year. So their starting five is really, really good. But the problem is, like you said, at the start of the podcast, they lost two key shooters with Ilyasova and Bellinelli. And they didn't really replace them because, well, they tried to anyway with drafting Zaire Smith, or trading for him anyway. And then broke his foot. Yeah, he broke his foot. So he's going to be out the entire year. So they're going to have to really rely on Markelle Fultz to be that scoring punch off the bench, because they don't have a lot outside of him coming off the bench besides your boy Wilson. And he's going to be a consistent contributor, but he's a guy who's been extremely consistent over the course of the last couple of years as well.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Wilson is the second highest paid player on this team.
Wow.
At $12.8 million. The highest is obviously Embiid because he got his contract extension. And then after Wilson, it's JJ Redick at 12.25.
Wow.
How crazy is that? This team has so much cap space available. And they obviously tried to get LeBron this summer, but it clearly did not happen. They're setting themselves up pretty well for the future, in terms of contracts, at least.
Yeah, I mean, last year, nobody really expected them to be as good as they were in winning over 50 games and winning a round, which is something that nobody ever thought they would do. So I think a lot of people thought this year they would essentially be doing what they did last year, and then next year would be the year that they hopefully go into the offseason and get a third star and, you know, build around those three guys plus the star that they get in the offseason. So I think it's a good thing they kept their cap space open rather than sort of do what other teams do in panic and just sign, you know, mid-level guys to way too much money and tie yourself up.
Last year they were projected to win like 40.5 wins, and they won 52. Like, that's how well over estimation that they went. It was crazy.
I almost bet a lot of money on the under.
I did bet a lot of money on the under.
No, there you go.
Oh, man, I felt that pain. So this year they're at 54.5. What do you think?
Honestly, I see them going under, but I can see them becoming a better playoff team with Ben Simmons and Embiid progressing. But I think their overall depth is sort of lacking, and I think that, you know, with them having Joel Embiid, who's been one of the most injury-prone players in the NBA, like, if he misses, you know, 10, 15 games, which is most likely what he's going to miss just based on what we've seen, they don't really have a lot of depth as much as they did anyway last year, and more multi-dimensional lineups, because you could play a guy like Ilyasova at center last year and not hurt too much in a pinch, right? Because you could play him and Sarge together and just spread the floor and just try to outscore teams. Whereas this year, if Embiid goes out, you have Amir Johnson playing a ton of minutes and Jonah Bolden, who's a rookie coming in, and he's not going to be reliable, obviously. So the key is going to be Embiid. If they go over that amount, if he actually plays 70 games and surprises everybody, then they could definitely go over by a little bit. But I think as long as they keep him healthy for the playoffs, this team is going to be very dangerous come playoff time, and they have the flexibility, as you said, to make a move at the trade deadline and make this team better if necessary. And they could also be a landing spot for Butler, too. Even though he's not on their list of teams that he mentioned today, this is a team that needs a third star, and they have the pieces to get him. So that's also a possibility.
Yeah, Embiid played 62 or 63 games last year, so he hovered around missing around 20 games.
Yeah, and arguably he was maybe, if not the most impactful player in the NBA in the regular season last year, a top three impact player.
Oh, easily.
So, I mean, they were the third-ranked defense in the NBA despite him missing that many games, and that just shows how dominant he is defensively, and obviously offensively he's just, he's amazing. He's a unicorn.
All right, so let's make a movement. I think we got to, unfortunately, trade Wilson Chandler back to the West, and let's get rid of Jared Bayless. Those two will easily match up to Jimmy Butler's contract.
Yeah, just give nothing away and get Jimmy Butler back.
Nice and easy.
Yeah.
Realistically, it would have to be Saric. It would probably have to be Wilson because of his contract. And then another, like, a smaller contract, which would be unfortunate for them.
Yeah, because they don't want to trade Markelle Fultz for good reason, obviously, since he could be a top-tier prospect. Yeah. You would have to look at a guy like Saric to the trade for Jimmy Butler. And if Butler actually doesn't want to stay there, he doesn't really fit, then, you know, you lost a really good player in Saric. So it is a bit of a risk, but if it does work, they could be one of the better playoff teams, especially in the Eastern Conference. But honestly, I don't really like that fit. I don't really think that you need a guy that's more ball dominant with Simmons and Embiid. I think you need a guy that's more of a spot up shooter, a guy that can come off screens and make quick decisions rather than, you know, handling the ball in the pick and roll as much as Butler does.
Yeah, I'd want someone who can hit a consistent three. Like, Butler is a good shooter, but he's not consistent enough for someone who would need to play with Simmons. Right?
So, yeah,
as a guy who can't really shoot the ball and isn't a threat on the perimeter, I want like a knockdown shooter on the outside.
Yeah, much like the rumors with the Lakers, a guy like Klay Thompson would fit in absolutely seamlessly with this team.
He'd be beautiful. Imagine Klay Thompson and J.J. Redick on the floor together.
Yeah, with Simmons handling the ball, getting those guys shots.
My God, that team offensively would be unstoppable.
Yeah, they'd be impossible to guard for sure.
Oh, man. So, the over-under is 54.5. You said slight under?
Yeah, I'm going to say they win 51 or 52 games.
Yeah, I like them repeating what they did last year at 52. It honestly really goes to how healthy Embiid is. And if Simmons can do anything with a jump shot, like, please develop any type of shot, even a free throw, and I would be happy. But
yeah, and he's going to have to expand his game too with the lack of shooting on this team. Because he's not going to have a guy like Bellinelli and Ilyasova playing in those, you know, international lineups that they played last year with four shooters around him.
Yeah.
He's going to have to figure out ways to get in the lane with more limited spacing.
It is very limited now. At least Embiid has like somewhat of a perimeter shot to loosen up the court. But yeah. Simmons needs to do something. He needs to learn how to shoot some sort of shot outside of the paint. And some sort of shot that's not like a right-handed hook, because that was his like bread and butter last year, and pretty much all he tried to do against Boston, and they shot that down real quick.
Yeah, especially come playoff time, he's going to have to find out different ways to punish defenses that lay off him. But he's a really smart player, and he's one of the smartest players maybe ever in basketball history from what we've seen, so I think he'll figure it out.
Yeah, I have no issues with him learning it. All right, the last team, the hometown crowd, the Toronto Raptors. A very, very eventful offseason. Got Kawhi Leonard, got Danny Green, signed Greg Monroe, re-signed Fred VanVleet. But they lost out on pretty much the face of the franchise, right? In DeMar DeRozan. Also lost out on young big man Jakob Poeltl. It's all up to Kawhi's health at this point, right?
I mean, this team was the third-ranked offense and the fifth-ranked defense last year in the regular season, but that part doesn't even matter.
No.
They got Kawhi Leonard because they wanted a guy that was reliable in the playoffs and maybe the best defensive wing of all time. And honestly, his offense it's up there. It's probably, top five, top seven in the NBA in terms of guys that can basically do everything on the floor. Like, he's really improved his shot. I think he was over 40% from three the year prior to last. And obviously in the finals, he's been probably the only guy that's been able to stand toe-to-toe with LeBron and often outperform him in the finals too. So obviously everyone knows when healthy, Kawhi is a top three, if not top two player. And if he does play the same way that he did pre-injury last year, this team could, I'm not going to call it right now, but they definitely, I'm very excited they could be a potential championship contender this year.
Woo! My God. You think they get there over the Celtics?
I think they definitely could. I mean, they have the best player in the series. And if this team reaches its defensive potential, because they have so many lineups that they can play now, the key to a championship team is to have any type of lineup you can go to versus a small team, a big team, a team with two stars, three stars, whatever. So with, you know, guys like Lowry, Green, Leonard, OG, Siakam, if you put that lineup together against pretty much any team that doesn't have a bruiser type of center, that team's just going to stifle teams by switching everything and playing Golden State's type of defense with guys who can really defend the perimeter and also defend on the wing.
Okay, now, my issue is if you play against inevitably Boston or Philadelphia, who do you run out at the five against Horford or Embiid? Ibaka or Valanciunas? Because neither of them are really defensive stalwarts anymore, right?
No, but it also depends how Nick Nurse is going to run his team, because obviously Casey was not a big fan of Valanciunas over the course of his time there. And JV is a guy that has absolutely destroyed Boston when he's played them. I think he had a 20-20 game last year against them, and he's had a few very, very big rebounding games. So I think against a guy like Horford, you want to punish him on the other end if he's going to, you know, space you out on the perimeter. So you want to use a big center against him to start the game anyway. And then as the game progresses, I think you got to look at a guy like Siakam that can switch on to, you know, a guy like Kyrie Irving. I mean, they put Siakam on John Wall last year in the playoffs just as an individual matchup. They weren't switching Siakam onto Wall. They just put him on Wall,
yeah,
to guard the perimeter. So he has so much versatility. And honestly, I think that he's going to start this year.
Over who?
Over Ibaka.
Whoa.
I think with his defensive versatility, I think this is the year where he sort of, you know, he becomes a breakout player for this team that can take them to the next level. He's going to be Draymond Light this year. That's
Serge Ibaka is making $21.6 million this year.
It was a bad contract,
and
but honestly,
Siakam
at this point,
going to start over him.
Money doesn't matter, man. Whoever's producing more should get the minutes.
Oh, man, that's a hot take.
And I think this team would be better with Ibaka playing the backup five anyway. I don't think that he's quick enough anymore to play the four. And honestly, like...
No, hold on. Serge Ibaka is in his athletic prime at 29 years old, okay?
Yeah, at 42 years old. Man.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I feel
But I mean,
you.
Like... Yeah, I mean, like, lineups with him and JV together in the playoffs especially just were not working. And I think that Nick Nurse is smart enough to see that, and he's going to separate them as much as he can. And I think if they do start the game together, that you're going to see a situation where they take one of those two guys out within 4 to 6 minutes of the first quarter and then go with more quick small ball lineups. And you're going to see a bunch of different combinations. Like, you're going to see OG play the four a lot, I think, and having him come off the bench after a really stellar rookie year is huge as well. And then obviously you still have Van Vliet, DeLon Wright, CJ Miles. You got Monroe as the third center, which is nice in a crunch.
Yeah.
This team just has so much. Even Norman Powell, like, he's going to be the 12th man on this team. And this is a guy who got a $10 million deal and played really well in the playoffs one year for the Raptors.
They are so deep. Like, this is, like you said, it's one of the, or has the possibility to be one of the best defensive lineups in the league. Right, like, they're so long, everyone can switch. Essentially, all the guards can switch, or all the perimeter players can switch with each other. From 3 to 5, anyone can switch with each other. I mean, they're going to be a lethal, lethal team. It really depends on how well, like, Kawhi takes the transition to Toronto, how well Danny Green and Greg Monroe integrate themselves into the team. I don't know, I'm very optimistic about it. I was optimistic last year because I saw DeMar DeRozan shooting threes and, like, in practices. But now that you have Kawhi Leonard, who can actually hit threes, and Danny Green, who can hit open threes, dude, this is definitely like an Eastern Conference finalist.
Let's just be frank here. You're replacing a colossal playoff choker in DeMar DeRozan with the rich man's version of him in every single way. Kawhi Leonard shoots better from mid-range. He's a better ball handler. He's a way, way, way better defensive player. He rebounds better. I think the only thing that DeRozan does a little bit better than him is playmake. But honestly, Kawhi in the Spurs system the last couple of years with Aldridge and, you know, not a lot of other playmakers, he wasn't really tasked to, like, you know, really get his teammates involved that much. He was more of an ISO player. But I think in this offense, as you saw last year with DeRozan handling the ball, not as much, but, you know, getting more guys involved. I think if you put Kawhi in that role, he's probably going to average 4 or 5 assists this year with the level of talent that's around him. And he's going to be able to rest a lot of games, sort of like DeRozan did last year with Toronto's bench as good as it is.
4 to 5 assists a game. That's a lot, man.
I mean, he handles the ball so much, and him having, you know, this level of talent that he has around him now. I mean, he brought the San Antonio Spurs, who didn't really have a lot of talent back then besides him and Aldridge, to the Western Conference Finals in a really tough Western Conference. And now you have an extremely good bench around him. Plus, you got Kyle Lowry, who's one of the top 10 point guards in the NBA, and, you know, a bunch of really good players around him. I mean, it's an upgrade over the Spurs roster. The only difference is the coaching, obviously, which does matter a lot. But in terms of overall talent level, this team is a much better team than the Spurs 2 years ago, I think.
You think Kyle Lowry is a top 10 point guard?
I think he is. He was top five about 3 years ago, if not 2 years ago.
Really?
Oh, yeah, for sure. He had that massive year where he was like 19-8. He was an all-star.
That's true. He's old, though, man. He's 32 this year.
He is, but at the same time, he's not going to have to do as much with Kawhi in the lineup, and he's not going to have to work as hard on defense and guarding, you know, the top-tier point guards, because now you have Danny Green, and you have even OG can guard, you know, guys like Damian Lillard and John Wall, and obviously Siakam can, you know, switch on to those guys, or just, again, you can put him on one of those guys like they did with John Wall, so.
Yeah. So where does this team fall? Like, how can it end terribly for them?
Obviously, the downside to this team is if Kawhi's not in the shape that he needs to be, but all reports say that's to the contrary. But if he doesn't come back the same player as he was 2 years ago, and he's not a top three, top five type of player, then this team may not be as good as last year, or may not be able to perform at the level they're expected to this year. So I think a lot of it falls on his shoulders, obviously, and getting back to the same level that exceeding the same level that he was at 2 years ago. And if that injury is chronic, that can cause serious issues for this team, obviously, down the road.
I'm kind of worried about them playing bigger teams. Because, like we said, Ibaka isn't as mobile as he used to be. Valanciunas has never been a really good defender. So when you're playing guys like, especially in the East, you're going to have to play Embiid a lot, right? Same division, too. I mean, that's where I'm having a lot more trouble with this team. Like, how do they handle, like, a bruiser? Or not, if not a bruiser, then just, like, a mobile big man.
Well, I think you can handle a mobile big man with Siakam. And then if you have a bruiser.
Siakam's really skinny. He can't handle Embiid.
Not against Embiid. Talking about, like, if you're going against, like, a more mobile big man, like a 6'9", you know, shooter type, or that can handle the ball.
Okay, let's say Miles Turner. That kind of big man, where he's mobile, he's a rim runner, he can still shoot, like mid-range, a bit of three. How would you defend Miles Turner on this team?
I think when you're going against a bruiser type like DeAndre Jordan, for example, you leave JV in the game. Yeah. And then if you have a mobile big man like Turner, I think you put Siakam on him because he's not going to hurt him in the post. And Turner's obviously not a real bruiser in that he's going to go in the post and try to punish people or get on the offensive glass. So I think the only types of big men that they're going to, you know, be in trouble against is the league's best big men, you know, guys like Anthony Davis and Joel Embiid. But if they don't play those types in the playoffs, then it's not really going to matter too much. And again, like every team in the NBA has a problem against those guys, but against all the other guys, they have many different options. I mean, Ibaka, even though he's not what he was in Oklahoma City, in terms of his mobility on the perimeter and being able to guard guys out there, even, you know, rebounding wise, he's really struggled. But he's still able to defend at a pretty high level. And, in comparison to some of the other guys that start around the NBA,
above average level. I don't know about high.
He's not great anymore, but he's adequate. He's good enough.
Yeah. Yes. I will give you that. He's good enough.
And honestly, I think Siakam's going to be one of the better defensive players in the next 5 years in the NBA.
Yeah. Siakam's this year is 24. I think by the time he's 27, he'll be, I don't know. Zach Lowe said it. And said that he could see him as a like an all-star in a few years. And I wouldn't doubt it, especially in the East.
Yeah, I mean, he could play the same type of game as Horford. And that, you know, he's the type of guy that can just fit in everywhere and be a defensive anchor out there on the perimeter and inside because he can affect shots at the rim. He can switch out on the perimeter. He just does a lot of things. And him and JV actually worked pretty well together last year, too. So that's why I think that's another reason to start them together. They have pretty good chemistry.
Yeah. All right, so their over-under is 55.5. What do you got?
I'm going to go slight under just because I think it may take a month or two for this team to really click. But I think once they do click, I think that if they develop a real defensive identity and, you know, become, you know, a top five defense again, and that actually be a real thing going into the playoffs, I think that this team, again, could be a championship contender. So I think the regular season doesn't really matter as much to this team. But obviously, it's a huge year, maybe probably the biggest year in the franchise's history, in that they have to get to the conference finals at least and put up a fight against Boston, if not beat Boston, in order to retain or at least, you know, be seen as a quality contender in Kawhi's eyes.
I have them around 58 wins. I have them over the projected 55.5. But I think they come out really well. I think, like, from the looks of it, Kawhi, obviously we haven't actually seen footage of Kawhi practicing, but we've seen pictures of him practicing. All the reports are saying that he's playing well. He's playing full 5-on-5. He looks healthy. I'm going to believe it for what it sounds like. I'm going to say it. They're going to mesh really well at the beginning. I think it'll be, like, seamless, the transition.
Yeah, and I mean, the good thing is they're bringing back pretty much all the parts of the rest of their team outside of, you know, Poeltl, obviously, and with their bench as is, and those guys playing together for 2 years now, I believe, with Kawhi coming into the fold, I think it's just a matter of getting used to how he plays. And, you know, over the course of the last 50 years, when you bring in a player like that, oftentimes it does take up to 1 or 2 months. I haven't really taken a look at their schedule to start off the year as of yet. But I think if they have an easy schedule to start off and they get off to a good start and, you know, are able to get the chemistry to where it needs to be, start off the year, I think later in the year they're going to just be a monster.
Yeah. Also, Danny Green is really good. Danny Green is pretty much what they wanted Damari Carroll to be.
Yeah, I mean, Danny Green hasn't been good the last 2 years on offense especially, but I think that's mostly attributed to the Spurs just not having pretty much any ball handlers outside of Kawhi. Yeah. And I think he works best in a system that flows. And Toronto showed last year that they're an offense that's extremely versatile, and a lot of guys get to handle the ball. So I think he's going to have a lot more opportunities to get wide open threes, especially in transition, which he's really good at.
Yeah, with a point guard like Lowry who can actually find his players, I think he'll do very well. Because San Antonio for the past couple of years was like a big ISO team, right? Especially once Pop gave Kawhi like the keys, essentially.
Yeah.
Like it was just, you know, Kawhi, go to work and then find people if you need like a bailout. But now with the moving offense, like Nick Nurse comes from Houston too, right? Like, so you're going to assume a lot of free-flowing basketball, which is pretty much where Danny Green thrives.
I concur. I think Danny Green's going to play a pretty good amount of minutes to start off the year, just to get him used to his new environment. And again, Toronto just has so many different lineups they can go to with you know, him playing with the bench unit as well, being a shooter in that lineup. And again, with guys like CJ and Norm coming off the bench in a pinch, if certain guys get injured, this team should be over 55. But just as, you know, the consummate pessimist that I am, I'm just going to choose a slight under. But I am I'm more optimistic with them in the playoffs than I am with them in the regular season.
It's pretty funny how, as a Raptors fan, you're super pessimistic. As a non-Raptors fan, I'm actually optimistic about this team.
No, I love this team come playoff time, but regular season, again, they might take a little while to get started up.
Yeah.
And they have a really easy November schedule, so maybe they will start quick.
All right. I think that's it. Any last words about the Atlantic Division? It's probably the best division to watch this season.
I look forward to partying on Yonge Street in June 2019. That's all I got to say.
Okay. And with that, we're out of here. I'd like to thank everyone for listening. Please remember to rate and subscribe. Hit us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all the major podcast networks. And until next time, peace.